Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So this is what I like to think of as season two.
Season two, after a very short season one.
Yes.
The pilot season, if you will.
Yeah, the hiatus was almost longer than the season, but we're back again now.
I think if we don't say it, people won't notice.
Oh, yeah.
So we're back anyway, aren't we?
We are back, yeah. We're back. Lots has happened. Lots of things to talk about.
Lots to chat about. And I've missed doing this.
Yeah, me too, actually.
We've just both been really busy. And I suppose we've come to the conclusion that that is going to happen sometimes.
Yeah.
So we want to get the Stuniverse out as often as possible. And there'll be some times when we just can't. And sorry about that, but we'll do our best because we really enjoy doing it. And it's so nice when people send us messages. People we don't know send us messages saying, loving the podcast. When's the next one out?
Yep. I'm so grateful to everyone who's been enjoying it and sending their ideas in. So
I'm more grateful than Stu, actually.
How much more?
Where are you on the scale?
No. You quantify your gratefulness first.
If we call yours X,
yes.
I'm X plus one.
X. Oh, so that's like almost the same, really, isn't it?
No, mine's more. If you had to give us the 30-second what's been happening in the universe, what would it be?
Oh, yes.
Go. Imagine, I tell you what. Let's do the news at 10. I'll do the gongs.
Okay,
you do the
you do the gongs,
and you and then you do each one as a headline.
Okay.
Just quick stuff. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Bong.
Astronomers have discovered gravitational waves.
Dong.
A strange radio flash from across the universe has done something and been demystified.
Dong.
Another one. God. Oh, yes, people think we can get to Mars in 3 days.
Dong.
I know how a space toilet works.
Ooh, that's exciting. Any more?
No.
It's that old favourite, that old chestnut. It's becoming almost a regular feature, isn't it? Gravitational waves. And hold on, is it our old friend Lisa Pathfinder?
Not in this instance, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's a completely different ground-based observatory called LIGO.
That's not as exciting, is it?
It does have massive laser beams in it.
You've got me.
Yes. It all just happened. These signals that we thought were there, these gravitational waves, predicted 100 years ago by Albert Einstein, have now definitively been detected. So it is quite, quite extraordinary. I mean, it's genuinely groundbreaking. The story that goes behind it is that a number of these gravitational wave observatories have been built around the world. They need to measure disturbances. These gravitational waves themselves are about a thousandth the width of an atomic nucleus.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say a human hair.
No way. Much smaller than that.
Much smaller than that, you idiot.
When they turned the equipment on in sort of September of last year, they were just getting ready to begin the final checks and to start taking data. And they'd spent about a year upgrading the equipment. And so they were all ready and they were hopeful of seeing something within 6 months or so.
Right.
They saw something even before they'd started taking their real science data, a really, really big signal and unexpectedly large. Which is why it was so obvious and so soon to be discovered. And in the analysis of this, the only thing they can find that really fits this signal that they've seen is the collision of two black holes, and each of the black holes is about 30 times the mass of the sun. And now they're one combined black hole, about 1.3 billion light years away.
So super black hole.
It's a puzzling size for a black hole. It's something that's called an intermediate mass black hole. And we know how black holes of a few times the size of the sun are formed. They come from exploding stars. And then at the center of every galaxy, you see supermassive black holes, which are millions to billions of times the mass of the sun. But this sort of 30 to 100 to 1,000 times the mass of the sun, we know of a few of those kinds of black holes, but they're very rare, they seem to be, and we don't really know how they form. So to see these straight away is fantastic, actually. It is, as I think I've said before, it's like having a whole new sense with which to observe the universe. So we've got sight sussed, you know, you see the light and all the other radiations. But now to be able to detect these ripples in the space-time continuum, the gravitational waves, it's like adding sound into the mix as well. So the way we look at the universe is just going to change completely. I mean, this is Nobel Prize-winning territory, without question.
You do look very excited.
I am genuinely excited about this, actually. Yeah, I mean, I ran the Guardian's live blog that day, and it was just, you know, it was thrilling. There'd been quite a lot of leaks leading up to it, so we pretty much knew what to expect. But even so, just the actual announcement itself that, yeah, this was true, the rumours were true. And one of the reasons for the rumours leaking out is because the scientific collaboration that's worked on the LIGO observatory is about 1,000 scientists. So it's pretty hard to keep all of them quiet. But the other thing, of course, is that they did it absolutely scientifically correctly, and they had all their results peer-reviewed by others before they announced them. So again, it's another route for leaks to happen. But it does mean that everything's been totally checked through. So this one is not going to go away, and the signal is just so obvious that it's clearly a positive detection.
I'm going to say something now that might sound, well, stupid.
Surely not.
I reckon it's possible. What does this discovery mean for us? I know you said about giving us that new sense for understanding the universe, but on a practical level?
The honest answer is it's not clear yet what this could do for us, what this will help. We are seeing these minuscule distortions now in this space-time continuum. And the space-time continuum is this mathematical construction that Einstein invented with which to understand the universe. It's like a framework. And we just don't know what the reality of the space-time continuum is. We know we can describe it with mathematics, but we don't know what it is. But now that we're actually seeing things happening to the space-time continuum, these gravitational waves, maybe the continued study of them will show us or give us clues into what space-time truly is. And that's really where all our progress in fundamental physics reaches the stumbling point.
Right.
Every time you try to go deeper than the theories we have, one way or another, you always end up just running aground on the fact that you don't know what the space-time continuum actually is. Is it particles itself? Is it something else? What is it? And so this gives us another route into that. If we can understand that, obviously every time we've understood something, atomic structure, for example, electronics, has given us electronics, things like that. You know, we've always found a way to manipulate it and use it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, understanding the space-time continuum will inevitably lead to us doing new things, new technology, new engineering, that kind of thing. Maybe even all the big science fiction ideas you talk about, you hear about, such as warp drives and anti-gravity and things like that. You're speechless.
Yeah, it's huge, isn't it?
It is huge.
I mean, quite literally.
Yeah.
Well, and very small.
And very small.
Tiny. I want to talk about radio waves.
Radio waves, yes.
And I know that you've had an article in The Guardian recently, haven't you? What is this story about?
Well, this story really is quite interesting. It began over 10 years ago when an astronomer called Duncan Lorimer noticed in some data from a radio telescope in Australia, the Parkes 64-metre dish, he noticed that there were these incredibly strong, really powerful blasts of radio waves, but that they lasted for a very short period of time, I mean a millisecond or something like that. And he was just looking through archive data just to see what he could see. But this sort of stood out head and shoulders, this one signal, above everything else. And so he drew attention to it and other people started looking. And since about 2001, we have only detected 17 of these bursts. And they get called the fast radio bursts. They have been...
Who came up with that?
Just
genius.
One of the local talents. Yeah. Slow down, boffins.
You're going to, honestly, you're going to burn out if you carry on at this speed.
At that level.
Yeah. So 17 of them.
Yep, just 17.
When you say 17 bursts, so how long did these bursts last? Was it just one single one each time?
Yeah, one single one each time for a millisecond or so.
And that counts as one of the 17 bursts?
Yes.
And there were 17 of these since when?
Since about 2001. Most of them were detected also by the Parkes radio telescope, which made some people think that perhaps it was something that was peculiar to the antenna, that it was a fault or something like that.
Or a wallaby.
Well, in fact, when they went looking, they found other radio bursts in the Parkes data that looked like they might be these fast radio bursts. And so there were many, many more of them. They called them, what is it? They gave them a rather strange name, peritons. I don't know why they called them that. It's not obvious, like fast radio burst. They discovered that these ones came when they heated up their lunch in the local, in the microwave ovens. And if they opened the door before the clock had ticked and the magnetron had stopped, as they opened the door, a little burst of microwaves affected, you know, hit the dish, and made a spike that looked like it was some kind of massive interstellar catastrophe.
Okay, so is it possible that someone has had scrambled egg 17 times since 2001?
Well, like an alien in a distant galaxy has made scrambled
or
egg.
Or a wallaby.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare. a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No. The majority of the fast radio bursts were just seen in archive data. But then they saw another one with a different telescope, so proving that these are real things. And they managed to sort of rig up alert systems so that when the telescopes picked one up, it would send out an email or a text to astronomers and other observatories around the world. And they could instantly sort of try and locate it on, you know, and see what was there. The result that was published this week was of the 17th burst, which had been localized. Other telescopes had pinpointed it and found that it was in a distant galaxy. And then more than that, another radio telescope had been able to see a really faint radio glow that persisted for about 6 days after this initial big burst mm-hmm. of radio. And that looks very similar, in fact, to the kind of signal that you get from colliding neutron stars and black holes, so tiny dead stars. These are not the gravitational waves. These are electromagnetic rays that come out. But it makes it look very much like these fast radio bursts come from these colliding dead stars. But the important thing, one of the key characteristics about the fast radio bursts is that as they travel through space, and they come, this particular one came a colossal distance, about 6 billion light years. Mm-hmm. And as it passes through space, the gas and the matter that it passes through separates the frequencies, rather like light gets separated into colors when it goes through a prism. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they'd seen the galaxy that this thing was in meant that they could measure the distance to it, which is how they got the 6 billion light years. And that means that they can calculate the amount of matter that it's passed through in order to have its frequencies separated in the way that they observe it. And that gives them a way to measure the amount of mass in that line of sight in the universe. So as we progress to finding more and more of these fast radio bursts and doing this with them, we'll be able to weigh the universe.
This is what I reckon happened in Australia. Mike, yeah? Mike, can you come over here for a moment? Yeah, what's that? Glenn? It's probably called Glenn. Have a look at that. What do you see on that piece of paper there? It looks like a very minuscule, very short radio burst, yeah. I tell you what, Mike, yes, Glenn, I reckon we can use that to weigh the universe. How's that happen?
That is exactly how it happened, with just two minor inconsistencies with the truth.
Is it our blasted wallaby? He's opened the microwave before it's finished. You'll probably see that appear on the graph. I'm leaving you, Glenn. That's we've gone into safe territory.
We are doing more of these recreations for definite.
Stu, can I get to Mars in 3 days?
No.
Well, why is everyone telling me I can? I mean, not me specifically.
Yeah, this is interesting. So light has pressure, The Japanese actually have done this. They unfurled a great big silver sail in space, like the inside of a crisp packet, really, but ginormous, and sailed on the pressure of the sunlight to Venus. Yeah, you heard that correctly.
When did this happen?
A couple of years ago.
What do you mean sailed?
So the light exerts a pressure. So it's just like the wind, really. So you sail on the wind here on Earth. You can sail on the pressure of sunlight in space. And these are what we call solar sails.
That's true. I'm Mike. No. I suppose you'd call it a sail that's just riding on solar.
That's it.
Any idea for a name? Sorry.
You've got to do it in bunny ears. Yeah. I think we should call it solar sails.
Solar sails. I like it. I'm leaving you, Glenn. Enough of that. Sorry. So solar sails. And that went to Venus.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea sort of really is that if you can do that with sunlight, well, lasers are ultra-concentrated light, so they'll give you a bigger push. And, there's been some calculations that perhaps you could rig up a laser sort of photonic propulsion or something like that and perhaps get to Mars in, days rather than months.
Like surfing on a wave.
A little bit like that, yeah, but more like sailing, as the name implies.
On light,
yes.
As the name also implies. Don't include that bit, John, because it makes us sound stupid. You made a rash promise in our last podcast, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
What was that promise?
That was to find out how a space toilet exactly worked.
Have you discovered how a space toilet works?
I have. So you need some form of vacuum device.
To suck.
Yes. Okay. I am now going to read you verbatim a paragraph from Wikipedia. The male urine receptacle is a plastic funnel 2 to 3 inches in width and about 4 inches deep. A male astronaut urinates directly into the funnel from a distance of 2 or 3 inches away. The female funnel is oval and is 2 inches by 4 inches wide at the rim. Near the funnel's rim are small holes or slits that allow air movement to prevent excessive suction.
You know, if I was on that space station, I'm not sure I'd be able to go.
No.
I couldn't be doing it if there's a vacuum going. That wouldn't help. Should we do a quick Big Fat Galactic Liar?
Yes.
I'm so excited about this, although
yeah,
I'm feeling like, what's the current score? Is it 3-1?
It's something like that, yeah. My batting average is not really very good on this one, so yeah. So here we go.
And I can see you're trying to psych me out with cricket references, so
I'm going to try and bowl you a googly.
He's running scared, ladies and gentlemen. He's running scared with analogies neither of us know or understand.
Okay, so here they come. Big Fat Galactic Liar. Actually, you usually do the introduction.
That's right, I don't mind.
No, you do it.
Big Fat Galactic Liar. Fact number one.
Astronomers see a star explode somewhere in the universe every minute.
Star explode every minute. Fact number two.
The largest volcano in the known universe is on Mars, one of the smallest planets.
And Big Fat Galactic Liar, fact number three.
It is colder at our moon's south pole than it is on the surface of Pluto.
Wow. Okay, so fact number one is an astronomer, not presumably not the same one, sees a star explode every minute.
Correct.
There are a lot of stars out there. I know that to be true. There are a lot of astronomers out there. I know that also to be true. I think that sounds quite plausible at the moment. Largest volcano in the known universe is on Mars, one of the smallest planets. That sounds plausible to me because it's a rocky planet, isn't it? And so, you know, there absolutely could be a volcano there, like one of these big gassy giants.
Correct, yep.
That's... Which, by the way, I could have been described as on Wednesday evening.
A gassy giant, yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah, I've witnessed this a couple of times.
I don't even know what I ate.
Well, I just can't get everything.
Over. Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, I did eat everything. I don't know why I'm not losing weight. I'm leaving you, Glenn. No. So I'm trying to think, where else could you see? There are other planets that... Are there other planets that aren't... that are rocky? Yeah, Pluto must be rocky, is it?
Yeah, a bit rocky, icy. Then you've got Venus as well, and you've got Mercury as well. And, of course, the Earth.
Of course.
All our volcanoes, you know, on the Earth.
Right, so I'm starting to think maybe that one isn't as plausible. But let me deal with Big Fat Galactic Liar. Fact number three... The moon's south pole is colder than Pluto. Right, now I think that's possible because presumably the south pole is the one that never ever sees sunlight. Ever. It's always the dark side of the moon.
And get you and your Pink Floyd references.
Yeah, well, comfortably numb. Is that Pink Floyd?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I don't know any of it, so I won't attempt any. Now I reckon that is plausible because it's not like there's an atmosphere to trap in heat. So I think because it never ever sees the sun, I suppose it might get a bit of bounce back from other things, but they're quite far away. So I reckon I'm going to say this episode's lie is number two. I reckon there's a bigger volcano that we know of elsewhere. I reckon it could even be here on Earth. Could you reveal the answer?
I could.
Yeah.
What now?
Sometime. Whenever you're ready. Don't rush it.
This week's Big Fat Galactic Liar is in fact number one.
Oh! Okay! Let me describe Stu's face in this moment of victory. Imagine a child that's just been told that not only are they going to Disneyland Paris or Euro Disney, whatever it's called, Disneyland Paris, but their parents have just bought them Disneyland Paris and are bringing it over and sticking it just outside Harlow. And only one person's allowed in, and it's that child. So what's the truth then? If they don't see one explode every minute, how often?
Every day.
Oh, that's still quite a lot, isn't it?
It's still quite a lot. Yeah, it's about one star explodes somewhere in the universe that we detect about every day. The largest volcano is indeed on Mars, and it's called Olympus Mons.
Good old Olympus Mons, and presumably not terribly active.
No, so we would think it is extinct. There is the tiniest chance that it could just be dormant.
Uh-huh.
And yet your reasoning was exactly right for why it's colder at the moon's south pole than at Pluto, because Pluto's surface sees the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
But just from admittedly from an extremely long way away. But there are crater floors at the moon's south pole. There's one called Shackleton Crater. And they probably never seen the sun. So it's as cold as it really as it can possibly be there. So
would it be a good place to keep the beer? That's another Stuniverse.
It's done, yeah. Dusted, put on the shelf.
Yeah, so this episode has been edited by John Shearer, who also provides some of the music for our podcast. So thanks, John. As ever, if you've got something you'd like to say to us or a question to ask, you can tweet us. You can tweet me at I'm Mark O'Sullivan, or one word, no apostrophes, or him.
Or him?
You.
At Dr. Stu Clark. DrStuClark.
Yeah, so you can send us a message and we'll happily try and answer any questions. Thanks so much for listening. Keep on telling people about it, and we will speak to you again. Very, your turn.
Very
soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.